In a tit-for-tat move, Iran blacklists dozens of British and EU-related individuals and entities for backing terrorism and inciting violence in the country. The European Commission chief says charges against the European Parliament vice president are very serious. This after allegations that Qatar paid bribes to influence the EU policy debate. And U.S. President Biden stressing Washington's strong support for Kyiv and the war with Russia. He says that the U.S. is focusing on boosting Ukraine's air defenses. I'm Behrouz Najafi. Welcome. Tehran slapped sanctions on dozens of EU and British individuals and entities over their support for what the foreign ministry is calling acts of terrorism and rioting in the Islamic Republic. The measures target 70 individuals and entities in Britain and the ministry says that those acts fueled the recent riots and violations of the rights of the Iranian people. The sanctions include visa bans and asset freezes. Tehran earlier imposed similar restrictions on other British and European individuals. The EU and the UK have imposed several rounds of sanctions on Iran for alleged crackdown on protests during the recent incidents. Tehran has rejected the allegations and says it's been dealing with rioters. Iran once again strongly condemns the decision by European satellite operator Eutelsat to take Iranian news channel Press TV off the air. Foreign Ministry spokesman says the move is politically motivated and aimed at preventing the voice of the Iranian people from being heard. Nasser Kanani also says the Europeans preach others on freedom of expression and the free flow of information, but they move to block out Press TV despite its compliance with international rules. He also slammed European countries for hosting TV channels that foment violence and terrorism in Iran. Eutelsat has warned Press TV that it will take the broadcaster off the air. Press TV has strongly condemned the decision. Israeli atrocities against Palestinians know no bounds. The regime forces have killed yet one more teenager in the occupied West Bank. According to the Palestinian Health Ministry, a 16-year-old girl was shot dead during an Israeli raid in an eastern neighborhood of the city of Jenin. The raid also left three injuries. Jenin has been a focal point of Israeli violence against Palestinians recently. The regime has also intensified crackdown on people across the occupied territories. So far this year, the military attacks have taken the lives of around 220 Palestinians in the West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip. Our West Bank correspondent Mona Kandil tells us more about the killing of the teenage Palestinian girl by Israeli forces.
The area where the Israeli forces have raided the house of Zakarni was inside in one of the overcrowded, of course, neighborhoods, and they didn't respect this issue that Palestinians, civilians, unarmed people are inside this area. The Israeli soldiers wanted to arrest those people who are considered as wanted for security reasons, members of the different resistance groups. So using their arms and their weapons in such areas would definitely lead to the killing of more Palestinians, of more innocent Palestinians. At the end of the day, this girl didn't do anything. She was inside her house. She didn't pose any kind of threat to the Israeli soldiers, yet she was shot and killed. The Palestinian Liberation Organization at the same time considered the killing of Jana as an assassination, because once the Israeli forces kill people in cold blood, knowing that none of them would be sued for their crimes, it's easy for them to kill more Palestinians, even if children, and posing no threat, knowing at the end of the day they would not be sued.
According to the United Nations, more than 11,000 children have been killed or maimed in the Saud-led war on Yemen. UNICEF says hundreds of thousands of children also remain at risk of death from starvation or preventable diseases such as cholera and measles. Some 2.2 million children are acutely malnourished, a quarter of them aged under five. Saudi Arabia, together with some of its regional allies, launched a war on Yemen in 2015. Hundreds of thousands of people have died ever since, either as a result of the war or indirectly through unsafe drinking water, diseases, and hunger. A UN-brokered truce this year lasted 6 months until October. The warring sides failed to agree on an extension. International relations professor Jamal Wakim says that the West just doesn't care about the toll that the war on Yemen is taking on children there.
This is not the first time they do that, actually. If we take the precedence of Iraq, when Iraq was put under sanctions for nearly 12 years and 500,000 children were affected and died of these harsh measures, when the former Secretary of State of the United States, Madeleine Albright, was asked about that, she said actually that it was a mere collateral damage. So this has been the case in many other situations. Whenever the war actually was in favor of the Western geopolitical agenda, i.e. the United States, UK, France, and other Western powers. So the case in Yemen is not new and unique because we've been witnessing the West doing the same in Iraq, doing the same in Afghanistan, elsewhere in Africa, for example, without being liable to any penalty, to any punishment, or to any criticism.
Unidentified gunmen have attacked a hotel popular with Chinese nationals in the African capital. A spokesman for the Taliban-run administration says at least three attackers were killed by security forces. He said no foreigners were killed, but two of them got injured while trying to escape by jumping from the hotel's balcony. Local media witnesses reporting a powerful explosion followed by gunfire. No claim of responsibility yet, but the attack bears the hallmarks of the Daesh terrorist group that has been behind numerous bomb and gun attacks in recent months. There have been a significant number of Chinese business people visiting Afghanistan since the Taliban's takeover last year. Beijing does not officially recognize the Taliban government, but it maintains a full diplomatic mission in the country. The Press TV's correspondent in Kabul joined us a short while ago with the latest on that attack.
Today afternoon, unknown gunmen attacked a Chinese hostel or guest house in central Shahrinau area in the capital, Kabul. Mm-hmm. The attackers first opened fire on the security guards of the hotel. Then they entered the hotel, and as eyewitnesses say, bomb explosions also occurred in the area. The Taliban spokesman in a tweet has said that the clearing operation in the area has ended. The attackers are gunned down, as Zabihullah Mujahid says, three armed gunmen are killed so far, and the clearing operation is ended. Zabihullah Mujahid, the Taliban spokesman, further added that no foreign guests were harmed as a result of the crossfires, but he said that two foreign guests were wounded after they threw themselves out of the building during the attack or crossfire.
The EU chief warning that the widening corruption allegations gripping the European Parliament is threatening the credibility of the bloc's institutions.
Indeed, the allegations against the Vice President of the European Parliament are of utmost concern and very serious. And we know that these raise serious concerns because it's a question of the loss of trust of people in our European institutions.
Four suspects have been charged and remanded in custody in a Belgian investigation into the scandal. They include Eva Kaili, a Greek vice president of the Assembly. Her assets have been frozen by Athens after bags of cash were found in her home shortly after she returned for an official visit to Qatar. Prosecutors saying that the World Cup host is suspected of influencing the decisions of the European Parliament through cash payments or gifts to top figures to burnish its image. Qatar saying it's not aware of any details of the investigation, stressing that any claim of misconduct is gravely misinformed. Well, I also talked to our Brussels correspondent, Jerome Hughes, for some details, and he explained how European Commission Chief Ursula von der Leyen responded to reporters' questions about a probe into the scandal.
And what von der Leyen was asked about is that, you know, just at around the start of the World Cup, Skinner was in Doha, and he was there for the opening of the World Cup, and he made some very positive tweets. He tweeted some very positive statements in relation to Qatar and made a few positive comments. And so, you know, people mm-hmm. have been asking, why was this happening at that time? Now, von der Leyen, she just completely fudged that question, and then she spoke generally about the need for, in terms of the ethics standards that the European Commission have, that perhaps it should be extended to the other EU institutions. But then, incredibly, at the end of the press conference, she was wrapping up and they were talking about energy, but then journalists started shouting and saying, you haven't answered our question. You haven't answered our question in relation to, has there been any contact to the European Commission from this team of police who are investigating fraud in the European Parliament? Have they been in contact with the European Commission? So eventually then von der Leyen came back, and she did. She responded by saying, well, you know, I would need to ask my officials about this, which is an incredible response in itself, because surely if the police had been in contact with her officials, she would know about it. And then she went on to say, in relation to the Margarita Skinner question, she says, look, if anything, if any new information comes to light, she says, we will act and react accordingly. So listen, the reality here is that there's a massive cloud hanging over the EU institutions at the moment. We're told by people and organizations that monitor corruption that this is nothing new, that it does go on. But really, at this scale and at this magnitude in some of the names. Now, when we talk about Margarita Skinner, by the way, there's no suggestion of any wrongdoing whatsoever. It's just in relation, she was asked to respond about all the media speculation. But, you know, we hear all this virtue signaling coming from the EU all the time, and pointing the finger in terms of corruption at countries outside the EU, and all of a sudden, it's sounding very sanctimonious indeed.
Now, Russia says that Europe's attempts to put an end to its reliance on Russian gas are absurd and frenzied. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov says that Europe has shifted to natural gas imports from the United States in a bid to overcome its dependency on Russian gas. But Peskov argues that dependency has not ended, as the continent is now leaning on American LNG. Now, those remarks came as the European Union is planning to hold an emergency meeting on Tuesday to arrive at an agreement on imposing a price cap on natural gas. Most of the bloc's members are struggling with energy shortages and fuel price hikes that's caused by repercussions of the Ukraine war. Now, speaking of the devil, U.S. President Biden stressing his country's support for the Kiev in the war. Biden says that Washington is focusing on boosting Ukraine's air defenses as Russia is pushing with airstrikes on the country's energy infrastructure. Now, he made those comments in a phone call with Ukrainian counterpart Volodymyr Zelensky. The Ukrainian president said that they also discussed further defense cooperation and protection of his country's energy sector. The U.S. and its Western allies have already announced billions of dollars in military aid to Kyiv. Russia says its continued supply of Western weapons to Kyiv will only prolong the war. So a while ago, political analyst Markus Papadopoulos joined us, and here is his take on the new pledge by the U.S. to give military support to Ukraine.
The Western ruling elites, instead of seeking a political settlement to end the fighting in Ukraine and to end the suffering of the population there, are continuing to send vast amounts of weaponry to the Ukrainian government, which will only prolong the war. And it should also be said that no matter what kind of weaponry the West sends to the Ukrainian government, this will not alter what will be the eventual outcome of the war, namely a Russian victory. Because when I say, as I have said since the 24th of February of this year, that Russia is winning the war, I mean in this way. Firstly, that Russia has captured a very substantial part of Ukraine. And secondly, the Russians, almost from day one, have been waging a war of attrition against the Ukrainian armed forces, specifically by using their artillery. Now, historically speaking, Russian artillery is preeminent in the world. And as a result of this war of attrition, the Ukrainian armed forces have incurred colossal casualties.
The nurses will take strike action in Britain on Thursday for the first time in the 106-year history of their union. Nearly 100,000 members of the Royal College of Nursing will be walking out nationwide, and that if the government rejected their pay demands. The work stoppage will reduce services to Christmas staffing levels. The union wants a pay rise significantly above inflation, which has surged to a 41-year high. But the government is saying that would be unaffordable. Britain has been witnessing back-to-back strikes across different sectors over the past months. The situation has been triggered by the inflation and surging energy prices that came on the heels of Western sanctions on Russia over the war in Ukraine. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Under the starry sky of the desert, from the very heart of evergreen forests, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains, closer, Iran.
Hello, I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. Salam. I have an appointment with the director.
Yes, yes. Come in, please.
Thank you.
You are Miss Mitra. How do you do? Thank you for coming.
How do you do?
We are making a documentary about the historical four-season bathhouse of the city of Arak, and we need your presence in this field.
That's wonderful. So I'll get ready for the trip.
The historical Four Seasons Bathhouse in the city of Arak, the capital of Markazi province, central Iran, is considered one of the most beautiful architectural works in Iran. The Four Seasons Bath Complex in Arak is considered an architectural masterpiece for its specific ornaments, paintings, and tile work. Banai script, mosaic, and polychrome tiles are the most spectacular ornaments used in the bath structure. The tiles have craftily been used to cover the body of the complex and portray the beautiful images of human beings as well as different animals and flowers. The historical bath dates back to the Qajari Dera, established by Haj Muhammad Ibrahim Khansari in Ahmad Shah's ruling period. A part of the Arak Four Seasons Bath has turned into a museum wherein precious objects from different historical periods are displayed. The bath was registered as one of the national historical buildings of Iran, and it is considered as one of the Markazi province's tourist attractions. Well, I am now at the site of the Four Seasons Bath of Arak. My reason for speaking calmly is that I am actually at the location of making the documentary, and everybody is getting ready for the job. Honestly, I'm a little bit stressed. I'm camera shy. Don't know whether I could do the job very well. Pray for me. Anyway, you can't believe how beautiful this place is. Here is one of the masterpieces of Iranian architecture. Its tile work and decorations are unique. And you know why it's called Four Seasons? Okay, the bath is named Four Seasons due to the tile work of its sarbine, or changing room, which depicts the four seasons of the year: spring, summer, fall, and winter.
It's your turn.
Oh yes, I'm ready.
Three, two, one, action.
The building of the Four Seasons Bathhouse is one of the most beautiful architectural...
Cut. Please, slower and with more emotion.
Okay.
Three, two, one, action.
The building of the Four Seasons Bathhouse is one of the most beautiful architectural and tile works in Iran in recent centuries that is considered a unique monument in Iranian architecture for its special decorations. The 1,600 square meter bathhouse consists of four baths, one for women, one for men,
one for religious minorities and a private bath. The sarbine, or the changing room, has 8 pillars, a high dome, and pleasing tile work and stucco reliefs with arabesque motifs, as well as paintings of historical scenes.
Cut. Thank you. It was great.
Okay, it's time for a short break. What is interesting is that the water required for the bath was supplied by a canal. The first floor of this building is about 3 meters lower than the street floor, so water is easily and with less loss of heat transferred to the bath. The women's locker room is one of the most beautiful parts of this building, which has an integrated dome without columns. The roof of all parts of the bathroom is arched dome. The cruciform pool is located on the floor of the locker room, which is made of black stone and is used to spray people who come out of the hot bath. The large storage tanks for water and cistern are in the middle of the building to make it easy to heat for use. 7 color tiles and mosaic tiles are the most important decorations used in the bathroom. Designed and executed very artistically, these designs have beautiful human, animal, and various plant roles and landscapes of rivers, springs, wild plants, and beds on the branches. The colors used in the tiles are mostly yellow, azure, turquoise, white, green, gray, red, and orange.
Are you ready? 3, 2, 1, action!
The bathhouse became the location of the Arak Anthropology Museum and houses wax figures as well as Qajar marriage deeds, spooling equipment, copper pots, manuscripts, and embossed metal dishes.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا O you who believe, اِسْتَعِينُوا بِالصَّبْرِ وَالصَّلَاةِ
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, Minbar. A lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Today we listen to the speech of Hujjatul Islam Salim Yusuf Ali.
My topic is this concept of putting into practice what we know. The principle that we have, which we find in the traditions, in the ayat, is that when there's a gap between what we ought to know and what we do know, and second, when there's a gap between what we know and what we practice, then this is the problem that we have. Now just think about it, brothers and sisters. Imagine if you knew exactly what you needed to know. And you put it into practice exactly the way you ought to be putting into practice, then what more do you want in life? They say that one of the greatest of the scholars in fairly recent times, not too long ago, Ayatollah Mirza Shirazi, the one who was famous for the tobacco fatwa, they say that, you know, he was an incredible scholar, very strong, very pure, very knowledgeable. They say that towards the end of his life, he had gotten some type of sickness and he went to the doctors. The doctors said that, okay, Hajaga, it seems that your time in this world is coming to an end. You only have a little bit of time left. So he starts to inform his loved ones and he says that, okay, you know, my time is near. Maybe it's a matter of months and I will be leaving you. Now, what do they go and they ask him? They say that, Hajaga, now that you're going, tell us what's going to change. What do you want to do now? Where are you going to go? Who are you going to see? How are you going to change things? He says that I have been preparing for this moment from the very beginning. I'm not going to change a single thing. I've already found out what I need to know and I'm putting into practice the best that I can do. Why do I have to change anything right now? I've already been preparing for that. This isn't any new news that I've gotten right now. But if I ask myself, brothers and sisters, and I say that if I were given that news, definitely 3 months, 1 month, 10 days, right, what would I run after? What kind of intense regrets would come upon me? What kind of tears would pour from my eyes? Tears of regret over time lost, over ignorance that I no longer have time to compensate for. So, brothers and sisters, one of the things we need to keep in mind is that it's not always such a, it's not so clear to us what's actually happening as to why we have this gap between what we do know and what we put into practice, and what we ought to know and what we do know. And so it's useful for us to examine, how does the Quran speak about this? How do the ahadith, how do they guide us? So a few points that we understand from these sources is, first of all, that there is oftentimes we do know something, but we lose touch with it. And when we lose touch with it, we stop practicing it. We see this so many times. Like, let's say, for example, a simple example. We learn how to do wudu in a correct manner. And then let's say a year passes and we haven't had a refresher about how to do wudu. And, you know, we suddenly hear a lecture and it's like, oh, you have to make sure, for example, to get the back of your elbow. You have to make sure to not get fresh water from the tap when you're doing the mas and so on and so forth. And then we're like, oh, you know, I've fallen into this type of bad habit. Right? That's a simple example. But it can apply to so many things. You know, whether it be what we say, what we hear, what we do, the way we interact with people. It's not that we didn't know. We knew at one point, but that knowledge somehow, it escaped from us. And this is why it's very important that we need to keep reminded. Right? Those reminders are extremely necessary, weekly basis, at least. Another thing that sometimes happens is that we need to know something. We know that we need to know something, but because it's inconvenient for us, we don't go and find that thing out. We just don't want to take the effort. We just take the easy way out, which is to just say that, okay, we're just going to go by what we think we know is the right thing. And this is something that, if we're not careful about, it can become a habit. There are these things, I just kind of fail. You know, we make a mistake. And instead of going back and picking ourselves up and saying that, okay, I'm sorry, I repent, I'm going back and fixing things, we get into a type of very terrible cycle of thinking negatively. That I failed once, now I'm doomed for failure. That's it. I can never get myself out of this. And that can lead to, you know, psychological effects, mentally depressive sort of depression we can get from this, where we just always think of ourselves as, okay, I'm a failure. All of these are condemned in hadith. We're told to look out for these. These are pitfalls for us. When we need to know something, we need to figure it out. Once we know it, we need to act upon it. One of the very powerful ahadith we have from Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, he says, إِنَّ مَاضِيَ يَوْمِكَ مُنْتَقِلٌ وباقيه متهم فاغتنم وقتك بالعمل. Very beautiful. Around this, on the same topic that we're speaking about, he says that whatever is passed from your day, it's gone. Right? That minute that just passed, you're not going to get it back again. Whatever is left of the day, it's mutaham. It's not clear whether it's coming or not. There's no guarantee that tomorrow is going to come for me and you. So what's left? فَغْتَنِمْ وَقْتَكَ بِالْعَمَلِ. Take action now. Take action. Right? When we come to find out about something, we get to that truth. And that truth is guided to us by our aql, by the sharia, by the true teachings, by taking advice from the people of truth and purity and the people of experience. When we get that, then we take action. And that's how, to go back to the initial thing, that's how we get more knowledge. That's how we climb the ladder. That's how we get to that elevated state. There was a man, and I'll end with this story. There was a man who once sends his wife to Fatima alayhi salam. And he has a question for her. He says to his wife, go to her and ask her that, are you and I considered one of her Shias? It's a very deep question, very important question. So the man goes, and the wife goes, she says, okay, my husband has a question for you. Are we considered one of your Shias? It seems that he understood that, you know, in this world, if you don't have the pleasure of Fatima alayhi salam, you don't have anything. So he asks her, so Fatima alayhi salam says that, very simple, if you follow our commands and you stay away from our prohibitions, then you are considered among our Shia and you will be with us in Jannah. The wife takes the message back to the husband and the husband is saddened. He tells her, go back to her and ask her more. So she goes back and she says, oh Fatima, ya Zahra, that we are those who we love you, but what you said is very difficult. It's very hard. Now what do we do? And Fatima alayhi salam, the gist of what she tells her is that they are the elite Shias, those who are truly with us, and they are the ones who follow our commands and they stay away from our prohibitions. Yes, there are others who, inshallah, with mercy and with tawbah and whatnot, that, you know, they'll be in a good position with the love they have for the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, but those aren't our true Shias. They're not among the elite. Inshallah, we ask Allah Ta'ala by the barakah of these majalis that we can be considered among the elite of the Shia of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Kareem Adi عليم حال حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد صلي على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Due to increase in the Zionist regime's crimes against oppressed Palestinians in 2022, the resistant groups and the Palestinian Authority have asked the international community to criminalize Israeli violations against Palestinians and to hold the occupying regime accountable for its crimes. The occupying Zionist regime has become so brazen that it regularly slaughters innocent Palestinians quite openly in front of their loved ones. We have taken a look at some of the world media and press's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. Middle East Monitor has more for us. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has called on the international community to criminalize Israeli violations against Palestinians and to hold the occupying regime accountable for its crimes. Hamas released a statement recently marking the Human Rights Day, which was adopted by the United Nations in 1948. The Palestinian Islamic resistance movement Hamas said the world is making this day as Israeli regime continues to escalate its terror and systematic violations against Palestinians, including deliberate assassinations, land theft, siege and racial discrimination, and segregation. The statement went on to say that the day provides a good opportunity to shed light on the scale and gravity of the unabated Israeli crimes against Palestinians. The Hamas statement added, "It is also a suitable opportunity to remind the whole world of its responsibilities to take actual action to criminalize the occupying regime's violations and colonial settlers' terrorism, work on putting an end to them and prosecuting their perpetrator as war criminals and international courts of law." The movement further stressed that Israeli crimes constitute a flagrant violation of the principles of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and the international law, reaffirming its commitment to the legitimate rights of the Palestinian people. Hamas further called on the United Nations and the international community to put an end to Israeli crimes in the occupied territories, particularly in the occupied city of Al-Quds and the West Bank, to end the unjust blockade imposed on the Gaza Strip and enable the Palestinians to defend themselves with all means possible, until ending the occupation and establishing an independent Palestinian state with the city of Al-Quds as its capital. Since the start of 2022, the Israeli regime military forces have murdered more than 210 Palestinians, including more than 50 Palestinian children. According to the United Nations, the number of Palestinians martyred by Israel in the occupied West Bank this year alone is the highest for the past 16 years. Incidents of sabotage and violence by Israeli settlers against Palestinians and their property have become almost a daily occurrence throughout the occupied territories, particularly in the occupied West Bank. Palestinian Wafar News Agency has also covered the same story. Palestinian Minister of Foreign Affairs and Expatriates Riyad al-Maliki has handed over to the prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, the ICC, a file on the Israeli regime crimes committed against innocent Palestinians. During a meeting at The Hague, the Netherlands, with Karim Khan, the Palestinian Foreign Minister Maliki stressed that the State of Palestine continues to cooperate with the International Criminal Court, the ICC, and the staff of the Prosecutor's Office to submit all documented information that proves that Israeli military and civilian officials have committed serious and continuous crimes against innocent Palestinians. He stressed that all of these crimes fall within the jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court, the ICC. The top Palestinian diplomat stressed the importance of the ICC and its role in holding war criminals accountable in the light of the rise to power of the extremist cabinet of terrorist settlers who bluntly expressed their schemes that are based on field executions and forcible expulsion of Palestinians. The Palestinian minister said bringing the criminals before international justice will contribute to the protection of the Palestinian people and deter crimes against innocent Palestinians. Elsewhere in his remarks, he called on the International Criminal Court, the ICC prosecutor, to pay a visit to Palestine and give priority to the administration of justice. Palestinian human rights advocates last year held a decision by the International Criminal Court, the ICC, to affirm its full territorial jurisdiction over the occupied Palestinian territories. The Israeli regime is not a member of the International Criminal Court, the ICC, but Palestine was allowed to join back in 2015 and has since called for an investigation into Israeli crimes. The Hague-based court has already opened an investigation into possible war crimes by Israel in both the occupied West Bank and the occupied Gaza Strip. In 2021, the United Nations documented 2,934 grave violations against 1,208 Palestinian children in occupied Palestine and the Gaza Strip. The United Nations Human Rights Council, Human Rights Watch, and other international human rights organizations have charged the Israeli regime with apartheid in the past 2 years. Local and international human rights groups have condemned Israel's excessive use of force and shoot-to-kill policy against Palestinians, at a time that mainstream media and Western powers turned a blind eye to the atrocities committed by the Israeli regime against innocent Palestinians. Many believe the Israeli regime will continue with its crimes against Palestinians as long as it enjoys protection and patronage of the United States. Turkey's Anadolu news agency has more for us. The Organization of Islamic Cooperation, the OIC, has called on the United Nations to set up a fact-finding mission to probe the recent fatal shootings of a Palestinian youth by Israeli military in the occupied West Bank. In a statement released recently, the Jeddah-based international organization held Israeli authorities fully responsible for this act. For the repercussions of assassinations and premeditated killings of Palestinians by Israeli troops, urging the United Nations and other concerned international bodies to establish a fact-finding mission to investigate circumstances surrounding the martyrdom of the 22-year-old Amar Mefler. It called on the international community, especially the United Nations Security Council, to fulfill its legal and political obligations, pressure the Israeli regime into stopping such criminal acts, holding the occupying Israeli regime accountable for all of its violations and racist policies, and provide international protection for the Palestinian people. Video footage widely circulated on social media sites showed an Israeli soldier holding Mefler in a headlock by a road in the town of Hawara, south of the city of Nablus in the occupied West Bank, on 2nd of December, as the two men tried to wrestle him away. The man then appears to strike the Israeli soldier before the trooper pulls out a handgun and shoots him several times at point-blank range as the Palestinian youth fell to the ground. Israeli military forces present at the scene prevented residents and ambulances from providing aid to the injured Palestinian youth, provoking clashes with the local population. The Palestinian Ministry of Health said Mefler had attained martyrdom for his critical wounds. The United Nations West Asia envoy, Tor Wennesland, said on Twitter that he was horrified by the latest assassination. Palestinian Prime Minister Mohammad Shataya said at the time that the criminal execution of the town of Hawara reflected the extent of organized racism being practiced by the Israeli military. Mohammad Shataya expressed his utter shock and anger over the heartbreaking video footage of Mefler being fatally shot at point-blank range by an Israeli soldier, saying that Israeli soldiers feel assured that they will not be held accountable for their crimes and atrocities, and this emboldens them to repeat such actions. He also urged the International Criminal Court, the ICC, at The Hague in Netherlands, to quickly hold the perpetrators of this crime to account.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Role of arrogant powers policies in recent bitter events in Iran is obvious. This is the part of speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on October 3, 2022, during the joint graduation ceremony for the cadets studying in the academies of the Islamic Republic of Iran's armed forces. This ceremony was held in Imam Hassan al-Mushtaba alayhi salam University of Officer and Police Training. Our younger generation has progressed brilliantly in all fields and arenas up until today. God willing, they will continue to do the same in the future, whether it is to defend their homeland, to preserve security, or to help the resistance front throughout the entire region. In the great movement to defend the holy shrine, both in social services and in scientific developments, as you can see, advancements in any scientific field are in fact made by the youth. They are the ones who drive this movement. Furthermore, we have seen in religious ceremonies, such as the Arba'in Walk, have millions of young Iranians traveled the path from Najaf to Karbala, and how millions more walked inside the country itself. Those who could not attend the Arba'in Walk in that spiritual environment walked in different cities inside Iran instead.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
In the fields of production and innovation, as you can see on television, our youth are bringing something new to the country's manufacturing and industrial sectors every day. Everywhere you look, you see the exceptional presence of young people there. Whether it is in dealing with an epidemic, in a religious aid movement, cultural work, or in relief projects during natural disasters such as floods, earthquakes, and the like. This young person is not going to despair. This young person is not going to detach himself or herself from his or her values. This young person is an inexhaustible force on the field. And of course, the young, pious, revolutionary youth have been leaders in all these fields. This is the current situation of our young people. Well, with this point of view, if we look at your presence here, those who have gathered in the Imam Hassan Mushtaba University of Officer and Police Training, and also those who are hearing this speech in other universities, your presence and entry into the armed forces is a great asset.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.